Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Founded in 1972, the Mermaid Theatre of Nova Scotia is a touring children's theatre whose productions incorporate whimsical puppets. The company has a global audience, having performed for over 4 million spectators on four continents. They will perform their stage adaptations of Leo Leoni's exquisitely crafted Caldecott Honor books, Swimmy, Frederick, and Inch by Inch, on Sunday, January 26th at 2 p.m. at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Swimmy is a tiny fish who uses ingenuity to fend off danger. Frederick, a poetic mouse, makes everyday life an artful experience. And the third story is about a lovable inchworm who shares his facility for measuring absolutely everything. The show features an assortment of innovative puppetry styles and imaginative lighting techniques. Jim Morrow is Mermaid Theatre of Nova Scotia's artistic director, a position he has held since 1991, and he joins us now. Jim Morrow, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much.
When did you discover your interest in puppetry and performance?
It's been a long journey, I have to admit, and it was a slow journey. It's something I never grew up with in Grand Falls, Newfoundland, Canada. When I arrived at Mermaid Theatre of Nova Scotia in 1979, I held my first puppet, and it was at that time a lot of fun. But I couldn't have imagined that I would be so seriously involved in the world of puppetry after 35, 36 years. So, it's like I say, it's been a slow journey, mostly with Mermaid, as a performer and as a designer and a director.
You studied with Jim Henson in France.
I had one of the most unique opportunities. There were 20 or 21 of us back in 1987 who were accepted to do a workshop at the prestigious Institute of Puppetry called Chalvin de Mizière. And I was one of two Canadians who got to go and study with Jim and his family members, and alongside these other serious puppeteers from different parts of the world in this beautiful sort of medieval northern community in France. And it was everything you can imagine. It was amazingly spectacular, and Jim was just a gentleman, and he was there for the whole time. He was actually in London creating the movie Labyrinth at the time, but he managed to come over and spend the 3 weeks with us. And I think in his career it was the only time he ever held a workshop like that. So we were very lucky, all of us. We knew it.
I cannot imagine. I'm dumbstruck by the amount of things I want to ask that I can't articulate about how that experience must have been.
I know. That's a whole interview on its own, really.
Yes.
There were two or three Americans there as well, which was wonderful. It was just great. It was a great collection of people. The workshop was held in English, but obviously there were languages from all over the world, so things had to be interpreted. But just to spend time, you know, in the cafes and the bars and the various places with Jim, and as well as at work, it was just amazing.
That means there was about 8 years between your first holding a puppet and then going to France to study with Jim Henson. You must have already learned a lot, but then just quadrupled it in the time that you spent.
Well, it's interesting because I never really had much of an interest in Muppetry, you know, hand-mouth puppets.
Mm-hmm.
But it really stimulated my interest just generally in not only puppetry for television, but also puppetry in general, and the people who were there, you know, as I say, as well as being there with Jim and his family, it was amazing to be with serious puppeteers, and many of them older than I was, from all parts of the world, who actually had made the choice to take puppetry seriously and get in and make it their living. And I hadn't at that point. You know, I had two children at that time, and I was about 30, and I was getting into the world, but I hadn't decided what I wanted to do, and it tipped me over the edge, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It was at what they called a stage, which was the word for a workshop, that kind of made me finally say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And I came back, and as soon as I made that decision, doors just opened up, and it was just amazing to watch it happen.
You've been the artistic director of Mermaid Theatre of Nova Scotia since 91. How has the company grown and changed under your leadership since you took over in the intervening years?
Oh, goodness. Well, it's not only me, obviously. We're many people here at Mermaid in the small town of Windsor on the east coast of Canada. When I began as artistic director, I was already immersed in the company and as designer, director, production person, all that. But it was kind of a natural evolution into the organizational aspect of our world. I think a number of things have changed, you know, since then, and have affected how we do work and disseminate our work. One of the big things was actually the computer.
Mm-hmm.
It opened up. It created opportunity for us to communicate with our international partners and clients, you know, on a daily basis, and that really changed things. And the other thing that changed our company enormously was meeting some of the most incredible, or working with some of the most incredible authors in children's literature, like Eric Carle, who's famous for The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and Margaret Wise Brown, who's no longer living, obviously, but she wrote Goodnight Moon, and Leo Leone, who's written many beautiful storybooks for children. So having the opportunity to adapt their work into full stage productions for kids really changed Mermaid, because it made people want to see our shows. They wanted to see these books come alive, and so, you know, there's a number of things that happened and over the course of the last 25 years, but those are the two main things.
You mentioned the internet helping you reach a more global audience more easily. Have technological innovations changed the way puppets or sets are constructed, the way you actually do the shows?
Well, I think modestly, our shows are I think known for their, well, I hope they're known anyway, for their elegance,
mm-hmm.
For their beautiful storytelling and their you know, striking visuals. So we take a long time to make a play. We nurture it through a 2-year process until it's pretty well ready to be seen by the public. So the storytelling has remained the same. The approach is the same. Obviously, technology has affected our work through the use of iPads and the way we record, the way we throw back music into the audience. And then it allows us to play with imagery that is projected, for example, on either front projected or rear projected if it's needed. So we're constantly researching and looking at new ways of enhancing the work. But when you boil it all down, you know, it's we're still performers on stage, performing live, beautiful stories for little children, and that hasn't changed at all. The only reason we will incorporate new technologies is if it improves the quality of the work.
How is it decided what books you will adapt for the stage?
Oh, that's a very good question. We like to produce work that children, obviously young children, like and are reading. And of course, there are volumes of beautiful, beautiful children's stories out there. So it's part of the criteria is we're an international touring company now, in that we perform regularly throughout North America, but we also spend a great deal of time in Asia and Europe, and we're about to head to the Middle East in March, and so it's part of our mission is to promote reading.
Mm-hmm.
To young people, and it helps that these young people are actually have the books in hand or in their classrooms or at home, and their parents are reading the stories to them, so then they can come to the theater and see their work, their favorite stories adapted to stage, and that opens up the theater experience for them. So part of the criteria for choosing a book is its popularity, but also has to have a very simple messages and beautiful visuals. I like stories that are not terribly complicated, nor are they terribly wordy. We like to explore puppetry and movement incorporated with beautiful music and simple language, simple storytelling language. When we're looking for stories to adapt, the first thing I'm struck with is what it looks like, because
mm-hmm.
I personally work visually, so I gotta kind of like how the images pop out. And then is the story something that we think is relevant for the development of very young minds? You know, it's reasonably complex, but we think we do a pretty good job.
I apologize that I don't know the answer to this question before asking it, but is the music original? Do you have composers on staff?
Everything you see and hear is original. Mm-hmm. It's all manufactured, designed, built, and composed, performed, rehearsed here in our studios in Windsor. So everything. The only thing, and even the written work, all our work is based on storybooks, obviously, so that's original work, too, that we get permission to adapt. But everything else you see, everything you see on stage, it comes from the minds of people here in Nova Scotia and Windsor at our company.
How big is the organization?
Well, you know, it's it's expanding. It's grown considerably in the last 20 years, I have to admit. We have a number of people on staff now, and they all have important things to do. And there are many different components to our company, and two of them I'm very proud of. Is one is an Institute of Puppetry Arts, where we instruct from the very young to professionals how the art of puppetry. I'm very proud of that. And another is what we call our Theater Loft, where we're professionals with an interest in object movement or animation or puppetry can come here and reside and develop their work in our theater loft. And we have people coming from all over North America to do that. And so, you know, there are many, many aspects of our world that are growing. And at some point we hope to have, you know, over the next 5 or 6 or 10 years, we hope to develop an international puppet festival here in Windsor. So
great.
There's lots going on. We actually also have a 400-seat performing arts center. And that doubles as my rehearsal hall, but when it's not a rehearsal hall, we sort of supplement performing artists, traveling performing artists to come in as part of our performing arts series. So,
you're bringing Leo Leone's Swimmy, Frederick, and Inch by Inch to the Mahewi in Great Barrington on January 26th at 2 p.m. What was particularly appealing about those books?
Well,
how did they hit all the criteria you need? That's adaptation.
You know, answer that very simply. You know, anybody who's read these books will understand why we chose them. You know, two of my favorite artists, storybook artists, would be Leo Leone and Eric Carle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that they were very good friends. And their style is very similar, actually. We chose to perform Eric's work in black light, ultraviolet light, so you don't see the performers. But in this, our adaptations of Leo's work, these three stories, the performers are visible. And I like these stories because they're different from each other. So we were able to incorporate different styles of animation and puppetry and storytelling. Swimmy is colored shadow puppets, and it's in a liquid projected world, and it's absolutely stunning. And we borrowed from Japanese flutes and sounds of the Japanese culture to enhance the world sonically. And Frederick is such a beautiful story about the poet Frederick. It's, he's this mouse who while the others are working hard to gather stuff, Frederick gathers other things like ideas and images. And he's an artist, and I just love promoting the notion of the value of artists in the culture, mm-hmm. even to little two-year-olds. And Inch by Inch is a romp. It's a counting romp, and we have huge puppets that appear on stage. And I'm sure most people in the audience are going, oh, where do they put all that stuff? Because it's just amazing. As the pages turn, as the story is told and the pages are turned, and a new animal comes, a new bird comes on stage, it's like another huge bird. So it's really quite extraordinary and quite powerful to see.
One sort of silly question before I let you go. Your bio says that you are an avid curler. Is there any relationship between puppetry skills and curling skills?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. But you see, when I came to Acadia University here in Wolfville back in the day, I came to study sports. Sports was my thing, and I'm a huge hockey fan. And people have to know that Windsor, where we live, is where the origins of hockey was. Right in our little village, the very first game of hockey, all the rules came from here.
Wow.
Curling I've enjoyed all sports. I love all sports, and really looking forward to the Olympics coming up, for example. And Canadians are good at both hockey and curling, as we all know, right?
Yes.
So I have an obligation to curl.
It has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, what a treat for you to call us here in Nova Scotia. And I hope your audiences really enjoy our performances, because we love to perform. And I went on online and I looked up your town, which is a beautiful village. One of the, I think it's voted one of the best small towns in North America. Mm-hmm. And the theater itself is just gorgeous, an old vaudevillian theater built in 1905. It's just amazing what you have there in your place. So I know our crew are going to have fun.
Jim Morrow is Mermaid Theatre of Nova Scotia's artistic director. They will present Swimmy, Frederick, and Inch by Inch this Sunday, January 26th at 2 p.m. at the Mehewi in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. More information is available on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.